When it comes to our health, when we feel that something's not working right, most of us go to a medical expert to deal with it. Yeah, there are some, maybe even you, who ignore symptoms because, well, for whatever reason, you don't want to deal with bad news about your health. Creating further health risks are the conditions that give either no warning signs or signs that create confusion. Joining us now to talk about a medical condition which, if left unaddressed, could become a very serious magnified problem is Northwest University Professor of Cardiology and Director of Cardiac Electrophysiology at Northwestern Memorial Hospital, Dr. Bradley Knight. Thanks for being here today, Doctor.
Hi, Chris. Thank you.
And I'm going to jump in a little bit with a website for you to gain more attention, information about this issue, heart.org. That's the website for the American Heart Association. Because what we are talking about, Doctor, is atrial fibrillation. Talk about what that is as far as the impact on the body.
Well, atrial fibrillation, or AFib, is an abnormal heart rhythm disorder. It's very common. The most common heart rhythm disorder affecting 3 to 6 million Americans. And the problem is that the upper chambers of the heart, the atrium, or the atria, will fibrillate or start to quiver and not contract normally. And this leads to a variety of symptoms, an irregular pulse, and can importantly lead to a stroke.
As I said, too, people mistake what they're feeling and think it's something else. In this day and age where we're more focused on psychology than physiology, a lot of people would take the symptoms of AFib as panic attacks or nervous disorder or something, anything but what the serious issue happens to be.
That's a great point, because this can be an intermittent problem. You may have atrial fibrillation for a few seconds or minutes, and you're right. A lot of times this is misdiagnosed as anxiety or panic attack.
Who's most prone to AFib?
Well, age is probably the most common risk factor for atrial fibrillation. About 5% of people over 65 have AFib, about 10% of people over age 80 have AFib, so it's an increasing problem with AFib. But other health problems can cause AFib. That would include heart disease, heart failure, thyroid problems, uncontrolled high blood pressure or hypertension. A big problem now is obesity. Obesity is a cause of atrial fibrillation. Obesity can cause sleep apnea. Obesity can cause high blood pressure and diabetes, and these are all factors with atrial fibrillation. And there's other conditions beyond health conditions. Excessive alcohol can cause AFib. Excessive stress can cause AFib. So these are things that are a little bit more within our control.
And as the population continues to age out, as they say, the baby boomers go past that 50 and 60-year-old mark, it sounds like this is an affliction that you said somewhere around the 3 million mark, that number could more than likely increase as we go through the next 5 to 10 years.
Yep. With aging and obesity, these are big problems. There's a prediction that by 2030, the number of patients with atrial fibrillation will double. So it's already a problem we're seeing more and more in the hospitals and in clinics.
I was reading, too, about AFib, that if someone has AFib with a heart attack and has a heart attack, that further complicates treating that person with a heart attack.
Yeah, patients who have had a blockage in the artery to the heart that can lead to a heart attack is kind of a plumbing problem. And atrial fibrillation is a heart rhythm problem. It's more of an electrical problem. But these are often seen together, and both need to be treated.
Now, as far as that idea of treatment, how many options are there? Is it a single point from a single patient, or is it going to vary case by case, person by person, and whatever variables are within those people?
That's a good question. Everybody with atrial fibrillation is at an increased risk of stroke, and most patients need to be on blood thinners. There's a fivefold increased risk of stroke from atrial fibrillation. But a lot of patients will have symptoms that would include rapid palpitations or irregular heartbeats, lightheadedness, shortness of breath, and the treatment goal is to reduce those symptoms, reduce their burden of atrial fibrillation, and improve their quality of life. But again, even if you have no symptoms at all and you're found to be in atrial fibrillation, there is a risk of stroke from the rhythm problem.
Talking with Dr. Bradley Knight about atrial fibrillation, which is a much more common affliction that people are dealing with, perhaps even in your family, that a lot more people need to be aware of, and that's one of the reasons I want to direct you over to heart.org, get more information. Dr. Knight is Northwest University Professor of Cardiology, Director of Cardiac Electrophysiology at Northwestern Memorial Hospital, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Now, as far as treatments for AFib, Doctor, is it strictly Can it be done addressed medically, surgically, or are there implants, much like pacemakers, for example, that help alleviate the troubles?
Yeah, the treatments for atrial fibrillation largely are based on medications. So there's blood thinners that can reduce your risk of stroke. There are medications that can help get you back into a normal rhythm and maintain a normal rhythm. There's medications that control your heart rate. But as you mentioned, if these medications don't work or they're not tolerated well, there are procedures or procedures called ablation procedures that can improve AFib. There are procedures to lower your risk of stroke if you can't tolerate blood thinners, and there's surgical procedures. An implantable pacemaker is designed for slow heartbeats. This is kind of the opposite problem. But there are patients who have both fast and slow heart rhythm problems and need a pacemaker. But atrial fibrillation is an abnormal, fast, irregular rhythm.
And once you go into a treatment program and hopefully, you know, come through with the best possible results, does AFib at the other end of the story limit your life in any way, shape, or form once you realize you have it and you're undergoing treatment for due? Does that start to eliminate things you can do?
Well, it's usually something that we can control well enough that people can continue a good lifestyle. And we encourage that because the factors that cause AFib, obesity, high blood pressure, the risk factors for stroke like diabetes, these would become worse if patients are inactive. So we really try hard to control their AFib to the point where they can continue to be active.
I mean, obviously, if you were smoking and drinking excessively, two things are going to stop right there, and removing salt from the diet. But, you know, as a lot of reports say, one or two glasses of wine every couple of days would probably, you know, as the reports are saying, help the cause in this instance.
Well, there's data that moderate alcohol consumption might prevent coronary disease or heart attacks, but alcohol consumption can increase your risk of atrial fibrillation. Excessive alcohol consumption or binge drinking can precipitate atrial fibrillation to the point where there's even a term, holiday heart, that we use to describe patients that binge drink and develop AFib.
And I guess on the flip side, as some people tend to do when they go through a self-discovery about this, this doesn't mean to shut down your life and become a hermit and remove all activities.
No. I'd say most of our patients continue to have a very good lifestyle and quality of life with proper treatment.
So what's the first couple of steps a person should take once they are diagnosed with a medical professional at the R&D dealing with AFib?
Well, the first step is to work with your doctor on a regular basis. If you have symptoms that suggest you might have AFib or if you've been diagnosed with it, to make sure that you're tolerating your medications, you're compliant with your medications, that you're on the right doses, et cetera. So careful follow-up and regular appointments is important. Often patients are referred by their primary care doctors to cardiologists or to heart rhythm specialists referred to as cardiac electrophysiologists.
And also, is AFib genetic? Does it run in the family?
It can. If you have a first-degree relative with atrial fibrillation, it increases your odds of AFib, but that's a relatively mild factor. These other factors we talked about, including obesity and aging and high blood pressure, are probably more important risk factors.
So at least two of those three you could do something about, blood pressure and the obesity.
That's right.
The aging, if you figured out how to do something about that, please let us know, by the way.
I'll be the first to let you know.
And I mentioned the website for the American Heart Association, heart.org. Is that the best place for people to get info?
It's a great resource. The American Heart Association and other professional societies are very good resources, both for patients who have been diagnosed with AFib or for patients or people that think that they have symptoms that suggest they might have an abnormal heart rhythm.
So for you listening, don't be dismissive when you feel something is wrong or think it's less than what it actually is. Obviously, don't always assume the worst case scenario, but nevertheless, if you have some questions about how you're feeling and how you're reacting to your body or your body is dealing with day-to-day situations, go talk to your doctor because, as with any affliction, the earlier you get to it, the greater chance you have of overcoming it, and it's certainly something that applies to atrial fibrillation. Find out more at the website for the American Heart Association, which is heart.org. We've been joined by Northwest University Professor of Cardiology, as well as the Director of Cardiac Electrophysiology at Northwestern Memorial Hospital, Dr. Bradley Knight. Doctor, thanks for being here today.
Chris, thank you very much.